I'm John Goldman. Sorry again for being late. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what we've been doing at the Goldring Center for Culinary Medicine. Just like show of hands, who's local here? Anybody? Okay, good. Most people aren't. Sweet. I mean, good that you are, but also but better for my presentation that you aren't. I'm a second-year medical student at Tulane, and I've been working with the Goldring Center for Culinary Medicine since I got here last year. And the Goldring Center is, we call it the teaching kitchen, and it's basically a way to integrate culinary medicine, which is teaching medical students, doctors, physicians, residents, and our concentration is really community members, both kids and adults, about nutritious eating and in kind of low-income scenarios. So I'm going to go over that in a little bit. So just a little orientation for people who aren't familiar. This green dot is kind of the center of New Orleans. This is Lake Pontchartrain, and this is all the Mississippi River. And so New Orleans sits in a soup bowl between the Mississippi River and Lake Pontchartrain. And this is kind of what I'm going to be going over the next couple of slides. These are three different Whole Foods in kind of New Orleans and the surrounding areas. And there are three Whole Foods in New Orleans. This one is in Metairie. It's on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. This one is uptown, so this is like Tulane's main campus. And this one is the newest one, which houses the Goldring Center for Culinary Medicine in Mid-City. And I'm going to explain the oh, that's unfortunate. But so this is the first Whole Foods. It's in Metairie and on Veterans Memorial Boulevard, which is kind of like New Orleans suburban main drag. It has the malls, the big box stores, kind of things that you would expect to see in kind of a regular U.S. suburb. And just so we know, the colors, the darker colors are higher income, and the lighter green is lower income. So Veterans Memorial Boulevard, like I said, is kind of where there aren't a lot of people living there. It, like the graph shows that it's this is from census data, 2010, that it's a lower income area, but I think that's mostly an artifact of it being not having a lot of housing. It's really mostly malls and big box stores. But if you contrast that with, this is the uptown Whole Foods right here, and this is kind of a very affluent area. I don't know if any of you have gotten to take a trip uptown, but it's a nice area. And so this is Tulane's campus, and it's a pretty affluent area. And so kind of what you would expect Whole Foods to be in kind of suburban or affluent areas, because that's what they're catering to. But then it gets a little bit more interesting. And recently Whole Foods opened up a store in Mid-City, which is where I live, which is the best part of New Orleans. So they opened up a Whole Foods kind of in an area that you wouldn't expect a Whole Foods to be, with a lower mean income, and as we're going to see in the next couple slides, a different population makeup than is standard for the other Whole Foods in New Orleans. So this is the same census data of 2010. This is African-American population concentration in these census blocks. This is, again, Veterans Memorial Boulevard, which is suburban. So you can see this is Metairie, which is largely white. And if we go back, you remember that this is also largely affluent in the dark green. And same thing with Uptown. So darker colors are a higher concentration of African-American population, and lighter colors are not. And then the same thing, and this is the Mid-City Whole Foods here. And you can see that it's very different than if you compare it to Uptown. So the population is much more, is a larger concentration of African Americans and other minorities. So if you kind of take that, we're like, okay, great. We put a Whole Foods in a low-income area. So now everyone's going to go to Whole Foods, and they're all going to get great food, and our problem is solved. We've solved nutrition in low-income areas. But that isn't exactly the case. There's convincing research that shows that simply plant by Cummins et al. Showing that planting a grocery store in a low-income area doesn't do anything to meaningfully change health metrics, mainly BMI and what I'm calling basket of goods, kind of what people are buying. So the Goldring Center took a little bit different approach, and this is some outcome. This is some of the data from the Cummins et al. Paper. They put a grocery store in a low-income area and compared it to the similar population in an area that didn't get a grocery store, and they found that only 26.7% of the sample use the new grocery store as their primary shopping location, and only just over half of the sample shopped at the new grocery store at all. And there was also, like I said, no statistically significant difference between the intervention and control groups in terms of BMI, fruit and vegetable intake, and perceptions in food access. So that's a little bit concerning because the idea was that if the access to food is the problem, you give people access to food, that should solve your problem. So we did something a little bit different at Gold Ring, and so kind of where we are in the literature now is we know people with low SES lack access to nutritious food. This lack of access has been associated with chronic disease, and based on the Commons et al. Research, improving access does not improve perceived access, change in eating habits, or improve BMI. So what the Gold Ring Center is doing is the idea is to bring people into the store. So we have a kitchen inside the Whole Foods where we provide hands-on cooking classes using healthy ingredients found in the stores. And the idea is to teach people how to cook quick, healthy, nutritious meals that are culturally sensitive and cheap. We also provide referrals to cooking classes where if a patient comes in to their doctor, the doctor can actually refer them to a set of Gold Ring teaching kitchen classes. And the classes are integrated between physicians, medical students, residents, and community members. And the idea is to kind of build that social capital between the community, providers and the patients that they're going to serve. And kind of the neat thing, it's only been around for about 17 months, it looks like it might actually be working. Since October 2012, in the past 17 months, we've had 1,293 unique attendees as of March 2014, and we've actually just moved from we used to be in the two-lane downtown campus in the medical school where there was a kitchen to now actually in the community center in the Whole Foods. And so this is some of the breakdown of people who are attending. We had 9 continuing medical education physicians. These are the people who we have records on. So we had 1,293 attendees, and then these are the people who we could classify as what kind of basically attendee they were. So 9 continuing medical education physicians, 388 were community members, 188 were medical students, 80 were residents, and 23 were undergraduate students. So this is repeat attendance. So the idea is that it's a 6-course curriculum. And as you can see, that number got cut off, but that's a 100, which if you're saying out of the 1,293 or 400 community members, only 100 coming back for multiple classes, that may not look so good. But I actually think, this might be my spin on it, but the rates between community members and medical students being roughly equal, I think actually tells us something, because we incentivize medical students to take this course by giving them elective credit. So if I go to all 6 courses, so medical students at Tulane are required to take elective credit, and we give medical students elective credit for doing the curriculum. And if you see 100 if 100 medical students are doing it with the incentive and 100 community members are doing it without the incentive, I think that says something good for the curriculum. This is also the total number of training hours, and it's just a fact of the people who are coming back. So each course is about 2 hours long. There is a 30-minute didactic session and a 90-minute hands-on cooking session. And so now I'm going to share a little bit of our first study that we did using the patients who are coming through. The idea was to compare dietitian, which is the control group, led nutrition therapy versus our GCCM, which is the Gold Ring Center for Culinary Medicine, 6-course curriculum, which is our intervention, and to compare biometric and sociometric data between the control and intervention group. It used a randomized controlled trial design to compare dietitian-led nutrition therapy with a 6-course module. The control group received an RD-led nutrition therapy consisting of a one-time registered dietitian counseling visit with a referral opportunity to an American Diabetic Association certified diabetes education class. The treatment group participated in 6 joint cooking classes over 1.5 months. Each 2-hour cooking class consisted of 30 minutes of didactic sessions and 90 minutes of hands-on cooking. Biometric data were collected through chart reviews from baseline to 6 months after participation in the intervention or control groups according to regularly scheduled primary care clinic visits. And the data points included for biometric were HbA1c, pooled systolic and diastolic blood pressure, total cholesterol, triglycerides, low-density lipoprotein, LDL cholesterol, HDL cholesterol, heart rate, body mass index, and hypoglycemic agents and insulin. Psychometric data were collected through survey at baseline and again at 1.5 months after following the nutrition therapy session for control patients or the last GCCM teaching kitchen module. These data points included dietary habits, attitudes, and competencies for healthy shopping, meal preparation, eating, and storage. In the GCCM study, 18, that's two-thirds, completed the GCCM intervention with an average age of 62, 75% being African-American, 67% being female, and 52.9% residing in a USDA-defined food desert, all comparable to the control group. So these are our initial outcomes, comparing the registered dietitian-led intervention versus the teaching kitchen intervention. In contrast to the control group, the experimental with marginal to poor diabetic control had significantly superior mean HbA1c reduction from baseline to 6 months in pooled blood pressure and systolic blood pressure. The largest biometric differences for both groups was total cholesterol, as the experimental group decreased by 14 milligrams per deciliter compared to the control group increasing by 17 milligrams per deciliter. The inverse relationship is similar for LDL cholesterol, as the experimental group decreased by 6 milligrams, while the control group increased by 13. The control group did have a 20 milligram greater drop in triglycerides than the experimental group and 15 milligram greater increase in HDL. Lipid-lowering medication and insulin were similar for both groups at baseline. And so this is the psychometric data. There were no significant results here. We did see the two biggest differences in dietary habits, attitudes, and competencies between the groups were the greater proportion increase in GCCM subjects compared to controls who mostly believed that they could eat correctly. But again, these results were not significant. So this is kind of serves as our baseline to figure out, you know, is what we're doing working? Are we in the right direction? So we were pretty happy with the initial baseline, that kind of offering a culturally specific hands-on cooking class will have greater and more lasting impacts than the current alternatives. So GCM is trying to build on the current literature by giving people kind of a reason to go to the grocery store and use what they can find in the grocery store, so they're not met with things that they haven't seen before, and to know how to incorporate it into their daily life and their regular meals. It also serves as kind of a community gathering space. Like when people walk in, they see this really nice kitchen. They're always asking about it, you know, how do we get involved? And we have all these flyers out there. And that's something that we're working on, is kind of the marketing to it. So given that, you know, this data, for the most part, is even before we got. So the RCT study is a separate study, but the data for the most part is before we got into our current location in Mid-City. So what we're doing is kind of trying to integrate more into the community there to basically serve as a community space and to have someone kind of around the clock as kind of a go-to what you can do with the things you're finding in the grocery store. And again, to serve as a prescription where physicians become familiar with it, can provide kind of more than just the FDA food plate. You know, these are the things that you can buy, this is where you can get them, and I've cooked this food and know how long it takes and kind of what it takes. And also to serve as a prescription, so in literally writing a prescription that says, you know, go to the teaching kitchen, the Golding Center for Culinary Medicine. So kind of where we are now is we know that it's not enough to simply build a grocery store in a low-income area and say that you're going to have better outcomes. And so what GCCM is really trying to do is give a reason to walk through the doors of the Whole Foods and to show people how they can cook healthy food, healthy, inexpensive food. And this is a picture of the teaching kitchen here. These are people at work cooking, and it's in the Whole Foods. And where we're going from here, again, that was our first study. We're continuously updating the data. We're keeping better records. And we're looking to increase our understanding of social, economic, and biometric data. We have a big research team that's kind of doing some interesting things. And it's pretty interesting to be a part of, because it's kind of like a world is your oyster sort of thing, because it's really the first time that a teaching curriculum is part of a medical school curriculum, and it's pretty novel in that way. And I think that is it. That's it. If you have any questions. So yeah, I mean that has been something that we've been working on. It's not an easy thing. We do like a price list of every meal that you are going to be cooking. We haven't done kind of an intake survey or anything like that, kind of what's your budget for food. But that's something that we've been thinking about doing, is kind of what is your average spending on meals, and so to kind of like coordinate that with what they're currently spending. If that makes sense. It's a work in progress, but I actually appreciate that comment because it makes me think about it. Yeah. That is also a very good question, and along the same lines, we're working with a couple nonprofits, and we're actually starting closer relationships with them. One is called the Cookbook Project. They actually just moved here. I forget where they were based before. But to try and create really culturally sensitive recipes, because it's true, and that is important. You can give someone a nutritious meal, and if it looks unfamiliar to them or something they don't eat, they're not going to use it. So it's well taken. Yes, there is a study that we have been doing, a survey of over 4 years comparing, I think, 9 different schools with kind of Tulane, and really the idea of it was to figure out does this intervention kind of change the appreciation of medical students in nutrition, and lo and behold, it does. But medical schools historically have not focused on nutrition. There's a long literature saying, kind of showing that, even with guidelines. I think the recommendation now is either 25 or 30 hours, and schools are given half that. It's not a focus. Being a medical student, I can tell you, it's not. It's given lip service. It's not a focus of what we do. But I actually think that's changing. You know, you take this for what it's worth. It was on, if anyone who follows Reddit, it was a big, long Reddit post from a medical student kind of lamenting how bad the nutrition was. So I think in this generation, whether you consider that a barometer or not of the N of one, it was, you know, I think that is changing for people. And this curriculum is spreading. We're moving it to those schools that we kind of did the comparison survey with. Other schools are sort of licensing this curriculum. I think UPenn is doing it, and there are a couple others who are doing it now. So it is moving in that direction.